Welcome to Big Talk for Breeders. My name is Michael Doherty, a show jumping breeder from the west of Ireland. And in each episode, I'll bring you a new interview with a successful sport horse breeder. Thanks for checking out the podcast. Now let's get started. This is episode number 26 with Dutch breeder Fred Van Straten and his daughter Josta of De Hazelhorst Stables in Denham in the Netherlands. In this episode, we discuss how Fred first became involved in sport horse breeding 40 years ago, some of those earliest influences and his hunger to gain more and more breeding knowledge. We discuss the policy for retaining fillies and the strict selection process that each filly must go through in order to be considered good enough to enter both the breeding program and the sport stable. We look at how some of the learnings from the sport stable and the breeding program complement each other. And also we discuss, based on Fred's years of experience as an auction selector, where a lot of the high profile auctions around the world could up their game. From what I can see, it seems like breeding or horses has been in your family for quite some time. I see your posts on Facebook, Fred, and I see some of the foals born this year being referred to as the 10th generation of homebreds, which is quite incredible. Who was the first family member that actually started breeding for sport or breeding sport horses?
It was my dad. My grandpa was a big horse rider during the time before the Second World War. My dad wanted to go also in horses, but at that time the tractors came and they didn't need any horses anymore to work on the land. So he married my mom, and my mom was a farmer's daughter, and they did some fruit and vegetables trade. So he ended up there, but his whole life he had horses. And our youth also with my sisters and me were riders. And no one was to continue the business. And then he said, when I was 15, we stop and we find a place that we can all have the horses and have a living from horses. So he went from the middle of Holland to the east of Holland. We lived near the German border and we started a riding school. And he took one of the mares with him also to the east. And then when I was 20, 22, he said, yeah, you need to be more serious and come into the business and do your riding lessons. And before that time, I was a show jumper, not on the level that she is, but I did some show jumping. And then I had an internship with Gerd Meyer. Gerd Meyer was a famous jumping rider from Germany, based here in Holland. So I groomed a lot with him. And went to the biggest shows with him. And he was actually from Holstein. So at that point, I get interested in breeding. And when I was at the show, it was more than interesting to ask to people what kind of horse is that and that and that and that. Then I was young, 20, so I'm now 62. So from that time, slowly we begin. But I was a bit stubborn, and to my old man, I said, the mare you have is an old-fashioned mare, and we need something from famous lines, and when I want to be more serious in breeding, we need to have different mares than the one you have. So he went with me to Belgium, and then the perfect combination at that time was Lugano Flugel. So we bought some mares over there. We went over to France to buy our main mare. We went over to Holstein to start buying over there foals and later on mares. But after 10, 15 years, we find out they're not healthy. They're small. They're not willing to work. Not enough performance. Bad character. And then business-wise, you need to make a decision to stop. But he slowly developed his own line. And then the sport came, and the sport came serious from that line. So now we are so much generations ahead, and still is the best line. We produce the jumpers on the bigger classes. And special on that line is they get old. And the durability of those horses, you see them growing, but when they are 18, 19, they're still in sport. And yeah, that's something you cannot buy, and you need to develop it yourself, and you need to be strong selecting. But on that point where we are now is from that selecting and from selling also maybe in other opinions and other people that they the better lines, but we stuck to the lines we have now. We're not buying anymore, and we need to sell because we have too much horses, but still selecting. And selecting even now on different points than selecting 5 or 10 years ago. But it's interesting to see the whole developing, and it's a family business, and yeah, later on the sport is telling the story for us.
Well, there's a few incredible things there. There's a few things to unpack. So when you started going to Belgium and to France looking for these new lines, are you talking? You're talking 40 years ago that you started doing that.
Yeah.
So there's two things that were maybe quite surprising or progressive for that time. One is looking for new bloodlines at that stage, 40 years ago. But the other thing is actually your father's decision to move somewhere to go full time into horses, especially at that time. I think that was that's quite a surprising decision. It's a big, you know, it's a big risk. Our generation are privileged that we can chop and change and decide, okay, we'll try this for a while, I'll try that for a while. But that was a very big decision.
Yeah.
Had your father an interest in breeding, or did he just have a broodmare? Like, was breeding something that he was thinking about a lot or that was important to him?
Or did time, the criteria for breeding were more the horse for inspection, for the approvals. Yeah. And a beautiful trot and a beautiful exterior type. But here is a business, and I need to tell the other from the family, okay, I'm investing in a foal or investing in a mare. You have to work, but bring money in. So business-wise, I was serious thinking, how can I make a combination between the riding school and the boarding and the breeding, and then slowly the mares also did their thing in the riding school, and we had students with more experience that were riding also those mares. So we get a combination, but still you need to make money, and making money from the horses, it's hard.
In the earlier years, apart from your father, was there any particular breeder who you felt you learned a lot from, or who gave you some really good advice in those earlier years when you were establishing the breeding program?
Yeah, Wim van Dam, also not alive anymore, but at that time he was a top rider and was the first Dutchman who flew over 2 meters. And he was at that time also practicing in performance breeding. So that was a big example. And in my early 20s, I went to Holstein. And then I want to read a lot. So I had advertising and magazines looking for books and magazines. And I drove 2,000, 3,000 kilometers to pick them up and talk to the people over there. And I wanted to read, but I want an explanation. Where is the performance? How can I use it? And then at that time, in the books, Retina was a mare with the big influence. Was the first mare who won the Hamburger Derby, and the first mare who had actually offspring later on. So I said to my dad, I definitely want something from that line. And the line was 104A. And so we started looking for mares and looking for foals. And we tried for 20 years, but later on we made the decision to quit. And at the same time, I came at Hampton Mailer's place, and it was also 40 years ago. And that was my biggest mentor. And what I saw at his place, the training with Italian, American people, and also sport, and Princess Haya from Jordan came over there. And I said, whoa, that's a dream. When you can breed in that way, that people are so interested to come to your place and do your thing and do your trade, well, that's my dream. And then 40 years later, I met him in the Holstein Halle 2 months ago. He is late in the 70s. I'm starting 60, but yeah, unbelievable. The knowledge the man had from breeding. So
was there something?
You cannot copy it, but
no. But I suppose, was there still something special that you saw or that you were told at that point that could be replicated or that maybe even changed how you were approaching breeding?
Yeah, and not, when you follow the lines of the stud book and they're judging your mare and then you say, oh, a bit more this and a bit more that, and then, but it's totally bullshit. It's all hair in the mind. They need to be correct. They need to be functional, moving, but the mind, careful, able to travel, able to relax when you are in the warm-up, able to do a combination, able to do a few days event, and still the last day. And yeah, things were changing. You see, it's still changing. And the stud book is still making a big point for that inspection and those approvals. But the sport is telling us much more. And that's what we use.
40 years in, it looks like you're breeding around 25 foals a year. And am I right in saying that it's now down to, you have 7 different lines, or has it gone much, much smaller than that?
Yeah, even smaller. We have still a lot of success with the line from Han van Mail, Capitol's line.
Yeah.
We had already 3 160 horses out of that line and still coming. So that's a good line. We have the mother line of Berlin and Casal, Holstein and 890. Then we had the Bellamy line. That's the biggest line for us. Then we had the Lotti Zotti line. And what more?
No, that's it.
We said goodbye to a lot of interesting and good lines. But mm-hmm. I'm not judging the lines. But maybe it's not working the way we combine those mares. And yeah, I cannot explain, but... Yeah. Business-wise, when there is not enough sport and not enough performance, then you wait for 3 and 4 years and nothing is coming, then you need to get rid of it and go on with the others.
Are any of those lines the one that you started with your father originally? Is that the Bellamy line?
Yeah.
Okay. So now with your own mares, you have an interesting process where it seems like all the fillies are kept every year, and are pretty much all the fillies, and all the colts are sold. So then, if you're keeping all or the majority of the fillies as foals, what does your selection process look like then as they get older to decide who's good enough to go into sport or breeding or both?
When they're 3 years old, they get x-rayed. Just a standard x-rays. If they're good, then they stay. And then the next selection is free jumping. If they're showing some quality, if they're showing what we're looking for, the character, whatever, then they also stay. Otherwise, we need to sell them. And then they get broken in when they're 3. And then they get their first baby at 4. And usually they get 2 foals. When they're 4 and 5, and then hopefully we have a filly so we can start in the sport. So that's the first few steps of selection. And then when they're starting in the sport, then there's another selection. Are we going to keep them? Are we going to sport them? Or are we going to say goodbye earlier in that stage?
And when they're 3, when you're assessing them loose, for example, could you talk to me a little bit more about that process? How many times are you assessing them before you decide you're good enough or you're not good enough? How many chances or opportunities do they typically get?
Yeah, 3 or 4 times. You know the mom, you know the grandma,
yeah,
and you're happy with the filly. But even when she is starting riding those mares and the rideability is bad, or you're not careful, or too tense, or name it, then we sell the mare, but we also sell the offspring. So Sometimes we call a trader and we said, we have a yearling, we have a 2-year-old out of that mare. Even this year, we had 2 embryos out of a mare that she started, but she wasn't happy with the mare and not satisfied. There's not a mare for us to invest longer with money and time. So we stopped. Yeah. So it's before they are 3, It is with great joy to see them developing here at home. Today they went to the field and they get into the truck and who is going first and who is dumb and who is smart and it's a process, and you see mm-hmm. you see a lot from the mom and the grandma and it's all inherited.
Inherited. So before three, aside from what you're seeing in the field and deciding if you like or don't like and things like that, there's no actual assessment, like there's no loose jumping before three at that point.
No, but the moment for me, when I wean them off, there are two in the box and later on there are six in the group. And it's every year for me nice to see how they react. And like this morning in the truck, who is smart? Who is the boss? Who is dumb and not careful and walking against the door and things like that? And then you have it in your mind, and we don't have that much there, so you keep them in mind. And when they start in that indoor arena the first time, you see them cantering and looking for the jumps, and you have also dumb horses. And then when they are not intelligent enough, or they're struggling with their body, Then she's like, okay, I give you a chance, but after two or three times it's not changing, then we're moving.
And are you seeing, say, with the horses who you're seeing, the ones who are generally really intelligent or not intelligent in just in their upbringing, when they're younger, when they're going out to the truck, when they're going into the field, are you seeing the same patterns when they come in for an assessment in the arena? Is it usually the ones that are smart about doing the other things, are they usually smart when you're doing your loose jumping, for example?
Yeah, for sure.
So it's not that they're like some of us humans that we're good in some aspects, but then we're terrible in the other.
No.
The good ones are good ones.
Then we get rid of them, we need to sell them. And then later on, I want to know where they go and what they are doing. And did we make the right decision? Or is it a big pity that we lost them? Yeah, till now we sometimes we miss, and I hope that other people has the same success we have. Mm-hmm. That's good for us. But normally the selection is tough and without any emotion. But till now it works.
So, Jossi, you were saying that it's typically they have a foal, they have the first foal at four and then another at five, and hopefully you have a filly. What happens if they have two colts?
Then we start sporting them again, or first time, and then we start flushing them. And then hopefully we get a filly by ET.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And say when they're three and when they're four, do all of the mares that you like get covered themselves to carry, or do some of them, do you ever decide that it's just embryos? And do you also ever decide we need to keep this mare forever to breed from?
No, they all go in sport and they need to prove themselves. And every day I'm looking on my phone and I get an email from Hippomundo and I said, okay, this one is in South America, or that one is in Italy, or that one is in England doing his thing. And then we miss them. But later on, when they show their quality, that's the best reference for us. And that's the reason that we have a good relationship with a lot of American riders. And they come here and they have already some generations and all selling to the clients. And even we have four generations in Wellington this year doing their thing. And in total, we have 11 horses out of our breeding in Wellington this year. And that's good for us. So slowly we are on a point in with these numbers that you say, okay, when after three or five attempts and still no filly, then it's a pity, but go and give the other the attention and move on.
And what's the main reason why, if you have a spectacular filly, you won't decide to just keep her purely for your breeding program?
No, she needs to prove herself. And then you get the story. It's a full sister. It's a daughter. But I did the selection for a big foal auctioneer in Holland, yes, for 80 mm-hmm. years. And I travel a lot and starve a lot. And I hear all those stories, but she's a sister and she is the daughter, but that there was a fat lame mare in the field showing the foal. I don't believe in it. I need to see them myself.
With the mares then that go off into sport and go around the world, do any of the mares ever return to you after their careers?
Till now, no.
And is it something that interests you, or is your interest in breeding from the best young ones?
Yeah, till now, we made big steps moving forward using the modern genetics. And when the mare is retired and 16 or 18, and she can have a good place with us, there's no problem. But we are already two generations ahead. Mm-hmm. So it's going much further.
Yeah, and I think what's interesting with that in combination now with looking from the outside in, how you're with your stallion choices, it seems to be following a very similar pattern. And I was even thinking about it this morning that in how, and I'm only obviously seeing Facebook and your websites and things like that, but it's almost approaching it like a really good dairy farmer. So I don't know if there's any dairy farmers in your family, but it's the best young mares, breed, move on, best young mares, breed. But then in your stallions, I've noticed that an awful lot of the stallions that you are using now are maybe younger stallions. It's not that they're not commercial, but they're not the big names. They're not the old ones that have gone and had their career and bred horses that have had their careers. It's typically the young stallions, and often either out of a very good mother or a very strong dam line that keeps on producing. And I actually wrote down a post you made back in February, and I wanted you to talk about it a bit if you could. But you said a stallion is just an extension of a dam line. And I liked that. And I wondered if you'd just talk about your thinking around the stallion selection as well.
Yeah. The reason that we use 6, 7, or 8-year-old stallions is see what they do. Do they have potential for the bigger classes? But more important for me, is there a combination and what they show, and what is the rest of the family doing? And was the mom in sport? Was grandma in sport? And when the expectations are there, then the risk isn't that big to use a stallion like that. And I think when you cover and you need to wait 6 or 7 years to make the right decision, it should be based on a thinking. And till now, what we find out with the best mares we had here, I also see the influence of the better mares in breeding. And you name Gute Sitte from Erik Wouters, Ratina, name them all. And now Butterfly Flip, it's for me more than interesting. And for me, the percentage of quality is 70-75% coming from the mom and the grandma and the great-grandma than instead just one stallion. That's my opinion. But till now, it's unbelievable when we have those better mares. When you see them in the bigger classes, then you see, okay, but the kids is doing also the same and easy. And the way she is riding and training, and sometimes she has a horse under the saddle, and you say, well, it's feeling. And this one doesn't need that much training. And I do a 140 or a 145, and still I have the feeling there is more. And that's the goal for us for the breeding. And when I see moms doing that, then I'm looking for stallions with moms doing the same. So the criteria, you're right about that, is a bit the same, looking for stallions out of better families, good mares behind. And yeah, not only story, but transparent story.
That's why I find it really interesting, and it's very in keeping with my own interests or belief, because I always find it strange in any other animal breeding, in order to progress the breed, it's to be breeding with the best young males and the best young females from the best families, and keep the generations advancing as quickly as possible. But I find the majority of the time in the horse industry, it goes a lot the other way.
Yeah. And so, that's the future for them. The knowledge that they have now and the ideas, and they are far ahead, hopefully, in the future on the rest. And it's moving so fast, and you have new investors, and they all money and selling embryos, and, well, I'm doing this and doing that, but the real breeder is building up pedigree and is selecting. And I have the biggest respect for the one who is producing better horses out of three or four generations, and that's thinking themselves, than the one who's buying that super mare and showing the first offspring and the medals, and, whoa, I'm doing this and that and that. Yeah, this, not for me. And yeah, I know how long it takes to get a bit of success and to make a bit of money and growing and developing your own lines.
With the colts that you sell every year, is there a point where you think, okay, well, there's some really interesting colts and you'd like to keep them and do the stallion side as well and have your own stallions? I think at least one of your foals this year is by a homebred stallion, but it's not something that you seem to do much with the stallion side.
No, at that point, I know the cost. The vet is coming every day. I need paying the fee of the stallion. And then at the end, I want to keep the fillies. And what we do now is selling the colts and keeping the fillies free. So everything is paid. And the rest is coming from selling the sport horses.
Yeah.
And business-wise, you need to make a choice. And when you stay strict on it, I learned it over the years. And you're right about that. I see a lot of colts and they say, well, should it be nice to but we have 120 horses at the moment, then we have 300 or 400, and there is no end. So for us, it's a system. Maybe it's not a wise system, but till now it worked. And like I said before, I like to see happy clients, and I like to hear that the horse we sell is doing the thing the way we breed it.
I was just curious, was there a temptation to develop that side? Sometimes I think when breeders own stallions, it can actually hold them back because there's a feeling or a pressure then that you have to give not all your mares, but if you're not supporting the stallion, then how can other breeders support the stallion? But it's sometimes this pressure that goes against what breeders actually feel is right. I wondered, a lot of the stallions that the young stallions that you're using or supporting, especially this year or last year, they're young stallions that I find quite interesting. This is a hypothetical one. If you could have free coverings to any young stallion, we'll say under 10 at the moment, is there one young stallion that interests you the most or is breeding consistently the best for you at the moment that you're really convinced by?
What surprised me this year was Oda Stanwyck, the Tobago. Mm-hmm. I saw Tobago winning in the Bosch Grand Prix. It's a small horse, but enormous mind and careful and unbelievable. And I forgot to use Tangelo. So when we can use a son of Tobago out of a good Boulon mare, and you see him acting at the moment, the young horse classes did this 140. And you see the foals, they're all surprising. They are electric and good body and size. And yeah, till now, unbelievable. So this year we had in total four. No, one is coming. Three we have already. But last year we had also two. And you see now they're developing as a yearling. Yeah, for me, promising. Dorkan Hero is doing this good thing. All build up the same. All length, size, good back, strong hind leg, electric in the body, built up. Yeah, and you see the breeding of Dorican himself and see him with Christian doing also the classes. It's such a promising horse. And what can go wrong with a line like that? And Zeus and Calvado behind, durability is good. And yeah, but there are more. There are so much selling.
Yeah, but at least with those horses, there's a lot of things are stacked in their favor. Obviously, we can't know if an injury comes or something stops them, but they have a lot going from them. You mentioned at the start of the conversation, or earlier in the conversation, about going around selecting for the auctions. And obviously, yeah, you were involved on that side for a long time. If you had to create your own auction in the morning, say you had all the resources to do whatever you wanted, what would that look like? Or what do you think that the auctions are lacking? Not one specific one, but just in general, the high profile auctions at the moment. Is there an aspect of them that you'd like to change, or something that you think is being missed?
The thing is, there are so many auctions. And I think when you wanted to make the difference, you need to work on your after sale. I think when you have a lot of investors throughout the world and in investing in a foal, and then when you can do the right after sale and find a good stable and try to follow it deal free and give some service, then maybe people are willing to invest in a longer stage. So it's not selling the foal, but also...
Yeah, it's a good point, because I've seen auctions where people have come in maybe 1 year and they've been active and they've bought a few foals, and you don't see those people back again.
Yeah.
Maybe a call or a check-in or to see what went wrong or why they're not. Yeah, why they're not.
Yeah, but they're also anxious to know that they are not okay or not healthy or not jumping or not moving. And last time I was on the coffee with a friend, also a breeder, and he needed to go to court. He sold the foal, and people find out 3 years later there was some bone structure in the back, not okay, and he needed a solicitor.
Yeah.
To have, and so if there's always a chance, and there is always a risk, but at the end you don't need to be ashamed, and keep the contacts and work on the relationships like that. And most of the auction it's on short term, making money and making this year even more money. But happy clients, I think, is much more important. And people are willing to pay for helping them, assisting them, and giving a better after sale.
And actually, on that point, is it something that do you find it easy to find time between the busy life of the breeding and the sports stable, but do you find time to get around the world to the different stables where your homebreds are?
The kids are traveling. They go to the US, and they may do. I hate flying, and for me it's okay. But they are the next generation, so they may go.
I'd be interested to know, like, how has the sports stable, like, how does, on an ongoing basis, how is that changing your decisions in your breeding program, or now with the next generation? I suppose you're both probably influencing each other in certain ways, but now that you see your kids, your grown-up kids, producing the horses, are they now influencing your decisions and your behavior?
Yeah, slowly it's coming. And remarkable, for 2 weeks, she stepped down from a horse. And she said, okay, we don't use that stallion anymore. The horse is this and the horse is that. And then she already wrote the mom, and she already wrote the grandma, and she already wrote a sister from a different stallion. So, yeah. And what I like when they are on the show, and you see on a simple national show, you see also in the practice classes, young stallions, and she's interested and she's talking, and then she comes home, I saw this and I saw that, and yeah, and I need to listen to them. For me, it's the biggest joy, the way that they work and having some success. Yeah.
What's really important now is you now have that recorded. So the next time where you're trying to make a decision and it's not happening, you can take out. Do you think, from your perspective, Jasta, when you have new mares coming in, the fact that you have ridden the mother and maybe the grandmother. Do you see that making your job easier? Because are you seeing the same traits come up, or the same maybe things that you had to work on, or challenges? Are you seeing it a lot from the daughters and granddaughters, the same attributes?
Yeah, for sure. I can really, the character is usually a little bit the same. If they're a bit difficult at one point, I can go back and think about how the mom or the grandmom was, and then maybe try this or try that, a little bit different training. And usually I must say that really works. And I sometimes you have a difficult one and then you realize, okay, maybe I need to understand it better. I'm not understanding it the right way. And then I'm thinking and yeah, working on it. And then you see and feel a difference. And yeah, I think it's the best thing to write the mom, the grandmom, the daughter. And yeah, I think that's so much fun. And yeah, you can really tell that they're so similar.
When you think about it, a lot of the time as breeders, we breed a foal and maybe we sell it as a foal and it goes to person A, and then our other foal goes to person B, and then they go all around the place. And the feedback loop is so slow. It's kind of an incredible and a bit of a unique situation there, where you've had so many of these lines for so many generations that you have that information keeps coming back, but then that you're producing all your own homebreds, it's instant daily feedback. It's not trying to track down someone on Facebook or find a number for them and call them and see how the horse is doing, and then maybe they don't want to tell you the truth, good or bad. You can probably make, instead of trying to change the direction of a massive ship, this is very dynamic in how you can make those changes and decide, okay, we need to focus more on this, or maybe it's take an extra embryo, or as you said earlier in the conversation, this line and those embryos have to go. It's a great situation to be in.
Yeah, for sure.
There was something that I remember I saw in past years. I'm not still sure if it's something that you do, but the Van Straten Breeding Academy.
Yeah.
Is that still something that is active or that you're involved in?
Yeah, but we have an issue with people. You cannot find any people who work for you on a stable. So at the moment, I'm doing a lot of things in the company. So there is no time for doing that. But we had some students and it was a lot of fun. Like I said, that there is a big demand for experience and knowledge about breeding. And when they sit here and I start with Hippo Mundo and horse telex and clip my horse, and I show them some things, then still they are in their own mind, but then they are at home. And then the questions are coming. So it's interesting. Actually, we had a guy from Ireland joining for 2 days here. And he bought a mare from Josta, a five-year-old, and wanted to flush an embryo. It didn't work out, but the horse was developing so good in the sport that he sold it to the States. It was more than happy and was in the stable for 2 months ago to find another horse. So it's working.
For the young person that's listening, could you just go into a bit more detail about what it involves, what the idea is, how someone can benefit from getting involved in that? Because I'm sure there'll be some young person around the world that it's maybe a good opportunity for them to hear what it's about or what opportunities are there.
Yeah, I think that the biggest plus in breeding is knowing your mare. And for knowing your mare, you need to work your mare. And not every mare need to do the 160, but the sport is giving you incredible information and useful information. And I tell the people, what's your plan? Do you want just breeding a foal, or do you want to breed the next generations and sell the mum and go on with the filly and making steps in your breeding? What's the plan? And then there is a big commercial story in breeding, and people are following the advertisements and the stories and the names. But why is the stallion popular, and how much offspring gave that stallion? And from all those thousands offspring, how many 160 horses produced that stallion? And it's the name. It's just the name. And every time I see all those comments on Facebook about stallions and, oh, yes, see the top 10. I have also a four pleasure mare. Whoa, good for you. But it's just a name. And that's maybe sometimes it hurts. Then they come and they bring the stud book papers and then they show the horse and till now what they're breeding and the choice of stallions. And then, yeah, I help them a bit. And then like I said, later on, they are at home. And then they call and they say, okay, you said this and that. And it works.
Can people choose how long they come to you for that? Or do you have like set periods that you take people for?
Program for 1 or 2 days.
Okay.
Yep. But I need more time. And that's the issue at the moment.
Yeah. The last question will probably cover some similar things, but it's the question that I finish each interview with. What advice would you offer to a young breeder or to someone starting off in their breeding career?
Just starting with the best from the best and try to get a relationship with an experienced breeder and do it together and slowly use his information and slowly develop your own line. But the most important thing you need to enjoy. You need to be in the field and see the foal and see the instincts of a young mare and not only behind your computer enjoying what you have, but you really need to enjoy the moments for me. But that's
the next generation. Also for me, for sure.
Have you anything different that you would add or even from the rider's perspective?
Yeah, we all enjoy really much the foals and see them grow up, and I enjoy everything around it. And when I'm sitting on them and getting to know them and jumping them, hopefully on the bigger levels, and that's the whole thing together is just the passion. I think what you have for the living and we all try to do everything on the most natural way possibly, and yeah, that's I think for us. The joy what gives us,
Do you think the level of exposure to breeding and your interest in breeding makes you better than when it comes to the sport? Like, does it give you an increased understanding of the sport and the horses and what you're riding and what you're riding against?
Yeah, I think so. You're really trying, what I said before, to understand the horse and to see what it's capable of. And to really, be together with that horse. And I think there are a lot of riders who are trying to change the horse into their system instead of the rider changes for the horse's system. So, I would say the whole package here at the stable and taking the foals out and just seeing them grow up. And I think that's the whole point of view that you, I don't know. It's a bit more horsemanship and stuff than just being a rider.
And there was one question. I know I'm going backwards now, but it was one thing that I actually really wanted to ask you about. And it's relevant to the sport and breeding. I'll be kicking myself if I only thought of it after we had finished recording. But the fact that the mares are coming from the breeding program and taking a foal at 3 and at 4, do you find then that those mares need any extra care when they come into the sport stable? Is there any difference or any more difficulties in their body, or are there any consequences of carrying the foal, a foal or two from the sport stable side?
Usually not really. They have once or twice physiotherapy. Of course their bodies are a bit more different than just a young horse, but for the rest they're way more mature than when you're starting up with a 3 or 4 year old. They're way mature in the body but also mentally, in their head, and you can really start to work with them. And that's the most positive side of it. And of course, sometimes you have a big foal coming out of such a mare, so it needs a bit more physiotherapy than another one who is a bit more, the foal is a bit more compact or something. But usually there are no differences or complications. No.
Okay, great. And then I just have the last type of person in my head. There's lots of young breeders and we've covered that, but I'm thinking of the young riders that are listening, that are out there, that have an interest in breeding. Are there also opportunities within your business for them to come and base themselves with you on the riding side? Or do you take in outside riders, or is it all just family run?
Yeah, the most is family run. Yosa is having an older sister, and she's having her own stable with her husband. And we're sending some young horses over there for 2 or 3 months, and then they come back, and then they are broke in, and they have some experience, some shows. And then Josta worked them further on. Mm-hmm. And then her brother, Fred Jr., mm-hmm. is having his own company in our stable. And he's doing a lot of trade with the U.S. And he's having constantly 8 or 9 stables for his own. And then he's training and trading. And yeah, so we it's a combination of. And then... yeah, we actually have some riders. We get a girl from Mexico, and the dad was already investing in some foals. And she's coming in June for 2 months. And then she joined Josta with riding and some grooming. But yeah, they can learn a lot. Yeah, we have some riders from abroad.
If you enjoyed this episode or any of the previous episodes, why not send it to a friend or share it on your social media?